Washington a la selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur de Nijir Jilamujian para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming...
So, it's now time for another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the November 2nd, 2023 edition, and this... as is becoming quite customary on Thursdays, is a flashback to, 13 years ago, July 25th, 2010, about 20 days into the Peace Camp 2010 protest. This was a protest which was originated by, I would say Ed Fry and Robert Blind Bear Facer were one of the major people who did this. The sort of the main inspiration, I should say. And it took place initially on the steps of the county building. Ed Fry, who's a local attorney and an activist, a little of both. He's also been responsible for helping to start Free Radio Santa Cruz and been involved with, at least in close proximity to the Santa Cruz Buyers Club for medical marijuana. And he's been a big fighter for the rights of people to use medical marijuana and to use recreational marijuana, as well as against prosecutorial misconduct by D.A. Art Danner back in the 80s and the 90s. He ran unsuccessfully for office several times. But I've known him as an activist who supports people outside. And he was concerned particularly about the abuses of the sleeping ban. And he actually not only became the supporter of for this protest, where he actually rented a porta potty and brought it every night to the protest for people to use, so people could sleep there in front of the county building, the theory being that they were outside the somehow the aegis of the city, although I always thought the city had some sort of agreement they could roll in and ticket people there if they needed to for different kinds of crimes, but they didn't most times. It was ultimately the sheriffs who drove Peace Camp 2010 to a new location, which was in front of City Hall. Not a bad location in the sense that the target was the city administration, the city council, the city manager that was involved in the actual enforcement of the sleeping ban ordinance. Now, the county did use a code called the lodging code, the state lodging law, to drive away the protest. And the problem, of course, for the people who were protesting, the concern and that of attorney Ed Fry and Robert Blind Bear Facer and actually the dozens of people who joined that protest was essentially the lack of shelter combined with the criminalization of people outside, with the kind of the ultimate conclusion that you can't fall asleep without being considered a criminal in the city and to some extent the county of Santa Cruz, though the city was the main target because it was the city's ban that explicitly at that time banned sleeping between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. This was 20 days into the protest, which was actually... it began simply as a daytime protest against the courts that essentially had found this 62-year-old man, Robert Facer, guilty of violating the sleeping ban law, even though he had no legal place to go. And so it was a case as far as Ed Fry was concerned, and many of the rest of us, myself included, as cruel and unusual punishment, a violation of equal treatment under the law, due process. And also there had been a case in Los Angeles 3 years before, a decision by the federal courts, the Jones case, which ruled that you couldn't arrest people for sleeping if you didn't have a place for them to go sleep, because you were essentially making survival behavior or involuntary behavior a crime, sort of like this was ruled not allowable in the case of alcoholics who had addictions, and also not in the case of homeless people who, or anybody for that matter, who had to sleep somewhere. And so this became the protest. There's a lot of discussion of it, if you're interested, in online at Santa Cruz Indie Media. It's still there, I guess. You can find that on the Huff website, or you can just go directly to the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and just look up Peace Camp 2010. And there's a lot of discussion of what went down there. And this is a bit of what happened around late July. It begins with Thomas Levitt's show. He had a show called The Wake-Up Call, which preceded my show on Sunday, which was Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. And we had various callers. Bob LaMonica, Battling Bob, as we called him. Curb Hugger Chris, who was Chris Doyen, then later known as Commander X, who became the essentially strong and inspirational leader, who was very media savvy of the Peace Camp 2010 protest. Ed Fry also stayed there for many nights himself, but he eventually, he was in his 60s then as well at that time, so he had a certain amount of staying power, but he wasn't immortal. You're going to hear interviews from different people at Peace Camp 2010 around the deputies stealing the Peace Camp flag and then banning Curb Hugger Chris, who was taking photos and doing audio recordings as an online journalist. He was actually involved in Anonymous, the network group of folks who engaged in DDoS attacks on unjust corporations, for which ultimately he served some time. One of those corporations was the local Santa Cruz. I don't know if it was the courts or simply the supervisors and the administration of the county, Chris was essentially arrested. He was arrested and fought it in court, that eventually fled to Canada and Mexico, and then was seized in Mexico after he did a broadcast, interestingly enough. He wasn't there in the Benchlands when the Benchlands was created as a sanctuary zone by the California Homeless Union in 2020. That was 10 years after this whole Peace Camp 2010 protest. I think Keith McHenry went down there and emceed it in the Benchlands, and Chris, from his distant refuge in Mexico, his exile, it was a sort of a distant MC as well. But apparently the authorities tracked him down, arrested him, and he came back, and he was involved to some extent in the resistance to the removal of the Benchlands in 2022, but not much has been seen of him. At least I don't know where he is, and I haven't heard any clear reports from Keith McHenry, who was a close colleague of his during that time. But you'll hear a lot of his thoughts, his descriptions of how Peace Camp 2010 went down. Then there are other people who were also interviewed. So, for instance, Kathy Bunker from Tennessee of the Nashville Homeless Power Project calls in and talks about their struggle for civil rights in Tennessee. Spilly Chili, also known as Sandra Lee, a community TV host, talks about various issues. And we play a bit of from Robert Whitaker, who is the author of Anatomy of an Epidemic and Mad in America, and we've had on the show before as a by phone, I guess it was. And we had some commentary by R.C., a psychiatric survivor, and then events from earlier in Peace Camp in the early days on July 12th and July 13th. And that's... It sounds a little dry, but it's more interesting as you listen to it. At least that's what I found, so maybe you will too. Pay no attention to the phone numbers mentioned. I don't know if there are a lot of them, but the only one that works, as far as I know at this point, is the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 831-423-4833. And that's one you can use to call in if you have any questions, comments. You want to do some reporting about homeless civil rights in 2023, not just back in 2010, which if I had more energy, I would be doing that for both these netcasts. I generally do it a bit for Sunday, though I also include a flashback there, too. So here's a flashback to check out. We may be announcing a protest soon. It depends on whether we can get it together. There's a winter coming. We're already feeling it in these mornings. If you're up early, you can feel the bite of the cold. And then, ironically, it gets kind of warm later in the day. But there is no provision for a winter shelter coming up, as far as I know, although there's some, I don't know, allusions to it by Mayor Keeley. He hasn't gotten back to me with specifics. And there's also some reports from the west side of violence against some homeless folks happening there, which I haven't confirmed, but I'd like to get more information. We may be doing some organizing on campus at the University of California, Berkeley, UCSC, to try to raise the issue. This is a particularly important time because of the awareness that's happening and because of the people in Gaza who are suffering from the bombardment by the Israeli colonial regime. And we're just sort of finding our way with this protest. It got cooked up at today's Huff meeting, so we'll see where it goes. Huff meets every Thursday still, if you're interested, from 10:45 in the morning to 1 o'clock or so in the afternoon at the Seb Rosa. Join us. That's a cafe next to the bike church at 703 Pacific. So, but we'll let you know more about that maybe on Sunday if you tune into the netcast there. And in the meantime, you got this one to listen to if you want. Check it out.
Since the flood, Where is the rebuilding? Has my country come undone? The scene is a disaster, from the freeway straight on through. And I know for certain this is not the very best we can do. There are those forgetting our youth who witness all, are looking on and learning what I wondered at Mardi Gras.
And that was a special street number from a new CD I got a hold of. Actually, it was passed on to me via Peace Camp 2010. It's Evie McKnight's Pirate's Cove. I'm not sure which particular cut that was, but you're going to hear more of them throughout the show. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, still broadcasting, but still hoping to find a transmitter before we get shut down, which is likely to be pretty darn soon. We do need a site on the west side, north side, or east side, can't do it downtown, where we can put up our antenna with a roof or a tree there. It's got to be a dry, locked, secure space for the transmitter that we can visit for maintenance and repair. And we need access to 15 amps of electricity and to the Internet, the DSI cable. We will provide an uninterruptible power supply, UPS for the Internet source and router, and a $50 per month electricity usage. And, of course, a how to deal with the FCC when they come stomping in, if they do, which they occasionally have in the past, but actually fairly infrequently in our, 16 years of piratical broadcasting. So we need a space. If you want to keep hearing this show, talk to your friends, see if anybody is interested, and give a call to the voicemail line, 427-4523, or email us by going online to freakradio.org, freakradio.org, and you'll be able to communicate with us, because we need that pretty strongly. It's... landlord is under severe pressure to abandon us, and I think he's really kind of given us notice, as far as I understand, indirectly. So perhaps you can help out with that, or perhaps not. We're going to be doing now some, I'm going to be doing some interviews, I should say, tapes of interviews from the last couple of weeks, many of them at Peace Camp 2010, which is, I think, a major focus on the show for the last few weeks, mainly because it is indeed a living embodiment of what we want to see happen in Santa Cruz, as well as a finger of shame pointed at authorities around the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes homeless people at night in a city that has no zero walk-in emergency shelter tonight for them, though there is, if you get on some waiting list, some people, a small fraction, can get into temporary shelter for a brief period of time, but there's no legal place for people to sleep, and yet there's a law that gives them $97 tickets and potentially a year in jail and a $1,000 fine, because there are many people who haven't attended to these absurd tickets, and they are facing the new Rotkin-Coonerty law, which makes a fourth unattended infraction a criminal offense as of, I guess it's going to be mid-August when that law comes into force, so... things are getting pretty nasty out there, and I've done a lot of interviews on, well, yesterday I did a number of interviews on that subject. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get to them today. I've got a backlog of stuff. Got a couple guests coming in, too. One of them, if he shows up, is a community TV guy who's invited me to come on the air along with Peace Camp 2010 folks to talk about what's going on, assuming Peace Camp 2010 is still going strong at that time. The city hasn't resolved the issue in a meaningful, humanitarian, and progressive way, which they should be doing, as Los Angeles and San Diego has been forced to do to some extent by the courts, and as Richmond did after talking with ACLU people. That sounds like we got a caller. Let's see what's cooking. Although it looks like the caller stop calling. So again, that's another point to call in. So you can call in 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We are in area code 831 if you're outside the area, 831-427-3772. My name is Robert Norris. I am the host of this show. You are the guests if you call in. And as I said, we have a community TV guy possibly coming in. I believe we're going to have a rep from Peace Camp 2010, or at least a sleeper who's coming in from there. I think Vamp said he was coming in, not sure. And we also may be getting a call from Tennessee. An activist there has been fighting the criminalization of poverty, the criminalization of homelessness, and she's going to talk about that, how things are back east. So if we hear from her, then you'll hear more from that. Let's go directly into some early waking hours of Peace Camp 2010. This is July 13th, right after the last council meeting. I should say council meeting before last. Boy, let's see. Yeah, no, it's the last council meeting, about a week ago Tuesday. We have another one coming up day after tomorrow, which I'll talk about. And with Thomas in the studio, Troublesome Thomas, the host of the wake-up call, which you just heard, I'm gonna chat a little with him about the rental inspection ordinance, which apparently he has not read. Neither have I, actually, but I've read about it in the Sentinel. It's been getting a lot of play on KSCO, the big AM station. I think yesterday there was a two-hour special on it, and different hosts have talked about it. It's, of course, a real belly acher for realtors who are pissed about the yearly fees, about the requirement of annual inspections for, I guess, owners with three or more units. And it's also, there's claims that there are going to be exorbitant fees for the actual inspections in addition to registering the units, claims it's going to destroy housing because people will not be willing to register and maintain illegal units. It's claimed, these are critics' claims, that there are already 500 complaints against units that have not been investigated, and further that this is really a kind of a backdoor deal that Mayor Rotkin is rushing through in order to because he made a deal with UCSC 2 years ago that he would provide a new ordinance and they would provide 450 units of housing. Thomas Levitt, of course, is on the case. He's been listening to me very carefully, following everything I'm saying, while at the same time doing three other things, which always amazes and baffles me. So I, of course, believe he isn't listening to me, but we'll have to give him a little quiz to see how well he's listening. He, of course, will be talking into a non-existent mic because he hasn't really placed a mic in front of himself. But Thomas is a man who takes care of things in his own time and occasionally destroys equipment in the studio. As do I. Thomas, I think you have a microphone. Is it two? Yes, it is, supposedly.
I think so. Yes, it's registering.
You haven't looked over this ordinance. You just heard about it from me this morning, right?
Well, no. I've actually heard about the ordinance, for a while. I think I read one article on it. I'm not clear on, what the ordinance is, what it proposes to do, how much it's going to cost to do anything, what it's a sensible motivation is, and then, what the real politics behind it are. I mean, having lived in a variety of substandard housing in Santa Cruz for an extended period, mostly because of economic necessity, I can appreciate both ends of this issue. One in the...
Before you do, let me go into this, Thomas. Let me interrupt you to tell you what the ordinance actually... According to that very reputable source, the Santa Cruz Urinal, which I call that, it's actually the Sentinel is what they call itself. It's hardly sentient, much less sentinel. And it's more, I think, more properly known as the Sent Anal in many regards. But here's what they say in their story of J.M. Brown's story of of the 21st, a few days ago. The ordinance in its current form, according to Brown, would include the following provisions: registration of all properties for a $45 annual fee each, with the exception of in-law units and single rooms for rent in single-family homes; eventual inspection of all rental units at $20 per unit, which covers a re-inspection if problems are found. Subsequent inspections would cost $120 per hour, and uncorrected violations would be subject to civil penalties. There would be no inspections for the first 3 years except for properties that already have reported or documented code violations. The regular inspection cycle will begin in 2013. A self-certification application for property owners whose units have not received code violations in the last 3 years. Self-certified landlords would still pay $20 per unit for 20% of all units annually every 5 years. The inspection would examine storage areas, roofs, lighting, bug and rodent infestation, electricity, water heater, running hot and cold water, sewage system, weather protected and locking windows, safe flooring and walls. Notice that rent control is not an issue here, which might actually make me more supportive of the ordinance, and you probably less supportive, but that's what the Sentinel says it does. What's your reaction, Thomas?
Well, those costs don't sound atrocious until you get to the $120 an hour thing. I'm not sure what the self-certification actually
represents. The real issue for
represents.
Me, Thomas, is what impact does it have on poor and homeless people? I mean, landlords have their own publicity and their own. They can talk about that.
Yeah, it's a balance, right? Yeah, many people. In Santa Cruz, affordable housing is often equated to practical experience with substandard housing that may not meet all the codes or requirements referenced, although it's not exactly clear what that actually would be. On the other hand, it is a unpleasant and often stressful to live in housing which has mold issues or termite issues or safety issues or fire code issues or anything else like that. That was my cell phone, I think, reminding me.
I heard a little tinkling in the distance.
So,
but let's get to it. There are 500. How many units are housing people that are likely to be dumped on the streets if this passes? That's a big.
Well, the question is
tactic. Concern presented by some people, and also Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, did vote to oppose this, with me abstaining, by the way, about a week or two ago when it was first broached.
Well, okay, so the. The thing exempts probably much of what qualifies as substandard housing in this county. I mean, not the granny unit in someone's backyard, the rooms for rent in someone's house, the garden shed in someone's backyard. At least that's what it sounds like. So, I mean, if you've got three units or more, it's an apartment building. I find it dubious that any landlord, even with that $120 an hour potential charge, even with the potential of having to cough up, money to make repairs that they'd otherwise, not do with the tenant's consent so they could keep the rent down, allegedly, it's going to walk away from all the money that they're making.
What I wonder about, and that's quite possibly true, Thomas.
I mean, $1,300 a month for a studio apartment, $1,000 a month for a studio apartment, $3,000 a month for three studio apartments above a commercial rental building is going to cover someone's mortgage unless they got the mortgage in 2006.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the claims of critics, actually, let me read you a little bit what the critics are claiming, according to our paper of record, the Sentinel. Let's see, what do the critics say? I'm looking for it. Well,
property owners are concerned about the cost. You're putting a tax on things. They're collecting money. That's all you're doing. Opponents also raise concerns the ordinance would cause rental prices to go up and put some residents of illegal units out on the streets. Some argue the ordinance misses the mark because it doesn't require inspections of owner-occupied homes, which can also house too many residents and have unsafe conditions. The city is bound by the settlement with UC Santa Cruz over campus growth to adopt a rental inspection ordinance within 2 years of the agreement, which would be September 12th. If the city fails to do so, the university can reduce its obligation to house more students on campus, the foundation of the agreement, by 450 beds.
Here's one of the fundamental issues here, which is, well, you know, you pointed this out last week with reference to the CPVAW ordinance on Indy Bay, is that, like, you know, we're at the end of July. This has to be in place by, you know, the beginning of September. And they haven't even published a copy of the ordinance. Where's the opportunity for the public to participate to help, you know, modify this to work, address any issues that the community, any elements of the community feels, you know, are inappropriate or punitive or ineffective? You know, et cetera. And they're ramming this through as an emergency ordinance when they had 2 years worth of warning. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Interesting. I mean, actually,
it's undemocratic. It's very typical.
And I haven't seen a copy of the ordinance yet, although
they're only required to post it 72 hours before the meeting in which it occurs.
Right, and this is not, and of course, the next council meeting is day after tomorrow, but it's not on that agenda. And I've heard, again, I'm not sure from where, rumors that it's going to be on a special August 3rd meeting. They don't normally have meetings in August because they're usually on vacation throughout that month. So that's
which would be also very typical.
But, you know, if there are 500 complaints about that have been already filed about units existing, why aren't they investigating those complaints? And what's the nature of those complaints? What's the documentation specifically? This is what I always ask about when the police department comes panhandling to the city council, you know, or right-wing residents want to have another law that gives police broader powers to harass and invade the privacy of poor and homeless people who are, you know, huddling in public spaces here and there or in their vehicles. We don't get the stats that say, here's the reason, this particular set of crimes, this particular set of civil violations, here is a listing of all the violations, which isn't that hard, I would think, to put together.
Well, they did put together and publish a website with the party...
party houses. The party at your peril law.
Et cetera. So.
I remember that, yeah.
It's certainly possible.
It's occasionally done, but, I mean, with the parking lot panic law and the parking garage paranoia law, the Coonerty laws make it illegal to be
I just pointed that out as an example of how it's possible for them to do it if they're
parking,
motivated.
Unless you're parking or retrieving your vehicle. For sure. So, my response, is that this issue has been broadly discussed, and is being broadly discussed in other more conservative media. For other reasons. And, of course, the conservative media is talking about the loss of housing and how they really have this great concern about poor people and their tenants, which I'm sure in some cases it may be true, but I think generally the concern has to do with the dollar sign, you know.
Yeah, the concern, the argument here is that if the landlord is forced to make necessary safety repairs, the result will be that they either decline to further to continue to rent the unit, or they will be forced to raise the rents on the unit to pay for the cost of the repairs. And there is some logic to that.
We need a little rent control here, Thomas, I think.
On the other hand, the fact is that, in most cases, this is like basically free money. the landlords, ultimately, many landlords will put as little money as possible into the property, in order to just keep it rentable under any conditions. And in Santa Cruz, the demand is such that, you know, you can rent a converted chicken coop with, you know, a door that's falling off of it and no bathroom or plumbing, where you have to go into the house in order to do it. So what incentive does a landlord have to make to do any maintenance at all, short of whatever is required to prevent the building from falling down or burning down?
I think what we need here are citizen action teams that go to the houses of notorious landlords and picket the houses demanding repairs, since the city apparently doesn't seem to be interested in holding landlords' feet to the fire. And the landlords, in spite of all their protestations about these laws, may not be doing it either. Again, I don't have the documentation, so I don't know that there is a series of massive health and safety violations in Santa Cruz. Rotkin, by the way, in the same story, this is about the last city council meeting, acknowledged some residents would undoubtedly be displaced by violations, but said the city can no longer look the other way. Landlords are also required to city rules to reimburse
displaced tenants. He's been on the city council for how many years?
On and off
since
1979.
And now, all of a sudden, he can't look the other way longer?
Actually,
30 years later?
Actually, city law provides for, you know, inspection.
Well, yeah.
City law provides for inspections, and there are 500, you know, 500 complaints.
The city law also
why aren't they inspecting?
Why
do they need a new law other than this?
You would think that there'd be revenue from that too, from fines, because you do get to fine landlords for failing to do these things, and furthermore, the law also says that if there's a health and safety code violation that requires the landlord to displace the tenant in order to correct it, that the tenant
gets relocation money,
whether or not it's legal or all this other stuff. If you're living somewhere, regardless of whether or not you have a lease, regardless of whether or not it's legal or public, you have rights.
Well, I think the way to deal with this is the same way I suggested we deal with the marijuana lowest enforcement priority issue. If you may remember, four years ago, there was a big organization that was pushing for Measure K, I think it is, which we now have a useless commission. And they spent $10,000 on a study and lots of money organizing this. And it had its own political implications. It wasn't a bad idea for other reasons, perhaps. But I said, just set up a private agency that makes Public Records Act requests for the police department every month, and then have activists, you know, engage in political education exposing police departments' use of marijuana, of the state, you know, medieval marijuana laws to harass people in Santa Cruz and demand that it stop. You'll get more action that way than setting up a little government commission that could be hamstrung by Rotkin and Coonerty and other supporters of the police department. Similarly here, if you had an activist group that took landlords to court regularly in small claims court, demanded those relocation funds for every violation that came up, demanded inspections, you'd get a lot further, I think. And plus, you'd activate citizens instead of waiting, having the illusion that the government's going to take action on this, which it ain't, and it isn't. Or it hasn't, anyway.
Well, you know,
again, I speak out of some extent of ignorance. I mean, if people have, I'm sure there are examples where the city has gone in and done this, but if there are 500 complaints outstanding, that means something. Again, I don't know what the complaints say.
Well, we don't know what the city's done in response to them either.
Right. But on the whole, is this? I mean, we certainly want UCSC to provide housing for its dumb students, or do we? Or is that just another excuse for them to expand by another 500 students because they can now, you know, they can now, they've agreed to provide that. So
I don't know if there's the money for them to expand at this point.
They seem to be endlessly expanding. I think they are continuing to expand this year. So I don't know that they're going to stop. I mean, you'd think in the middle of a depression, you know, these large institutions would stop, but turds always float to the top here, and it looks like we've got, you know, the wealthy, again, getting wealthier, institutions and developers, you know, instituting and developing, building more empty buildings and useless facilities and raising the fees on the backs of, you know, working and low-income and poor people. I agree, that's a litany and a prejudice I have, but I think it's probably also quite true under these circumstances. What do you think? Stop me from my ideological Marxist madness here.
Well, I mean, you know, there's two sets of issues. One is the process issue, which is the city council. This is rumors. The Sentinel has some thing of it, but I don't. It sounds like the Sentinel didn't even actually get to see the article. They just the draft regulations. They just heard a description of it from the city. I don't believe this has been published anywhere, we don't know when it's going to be scheduled. We just know it has to be within this certain period. Etc. So, like, you know, in essence, we're reduced to speculation, and we also have no formal vehicle other than, like, random letters to the city council, which may or may not be factually correct and informed, to figure out if this is a good idea. I mean, you know, having lived in substandard housing, you know, I would love it if, you know, the landlord, you know, would be required to fix fundamental health and safety issues. You know, even to a certain extent, if it raised my rent not unreasonably, you know, and to a certain extent, you know, the argument that, like, landlords would be forced to up their rents is true and not true in the sense that, like, you know, you fix a health and safety issue, that doesn't necessarily make the apartment inherently rentable for another $400 a month. You know, people do have the ability to basically, you know, live, you know, and they have a variety of living choices. It's not like, you know, your crappy apartment is suddenly going to become a jewel that's attractive to everyone.
Well, Huff voted to oppose this ordinance if and when we get to see it. I've just looked on the city's website, and there's nothing there about the ordinance. There isn't even anything there about an August 3rd meeting. So it looks like the city is going to, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the city wanting to pull a fast one. And if they want to pass this ordinance, they'll have to do it either through two meetings separated by, I think, 2 weeks, although I'm not entirely sure about the separation.
Yeah, they're going
to
pass this.
Actually, they don't have to separate
ordinance.
It by 2 weeks. They can separate it by 1 week. I think they just have to read it twice. They did that in the summer of 2002.
3 days, then it would have to be because
perhaps
of the notice thing. So.
I mean, they passed the downtown ordinance, forbidden zone, harassment of the poor, homeless, and performers and activist ordinance in record time under Riley and Porter in the summer of 2002. They had, I think, 6 meetings in 4 weeks or something. It was amazing. It was just, you know, unheard of. So they can do it very quickly, and they can do it with only 72-hour notice. So, but this one, interestingly enough, has a lot of realtor anger and power against it. So there might be something happening here. Although Rotkin says he's talked to neighborhood groups and he's made changes in the ordinance for the Santa Cruz neighbors and the downtown neighbors and these groups. So maybe he's got some of them on his side. And he's certain all he has to do, city council is really pretty much untouchable until, of course, there's an election coming up. But the two main criminals on the city council, and I use the term metaphorically rather than claiming they've actually been convicted of a crime. They have not. Matthews and Rotkin, criminals in terms of their human rights violations against the poor and their violations of due process at city council, they won't be running again, at least not for 2 years. So, mm-hmm. So they're off the council. We're going to get probably Kennedy coming back trying to, and Porter coming back. And we're having these, the recycling, let the recycling begin. That's going to happen soon.
Either that or, you know, someone promoted by Santa Cruz neighbors and takes PAC Santa Cruz running on a law and order agenda.
Yeah, you know,
which will be exciting.
You know, Banish the Bums platform will no doubt be coming up.
Yes.
I'm going to play a little music now. I for those interested in this issue, and by the way, the ordinance that we talked about last Sunday, Jillian Greenside's vain attempt to get the city council to reconsider the weakening bylaws that were rubber stamped by the city council at the last meeting. I guess it was 2 meetings ago. I'm not sure when it was. I'm losing my mind.
It says July 27, 2013 council meeting. I'm looking at the article right now.
Yeah, about... Okay, so that was the last meeting. 7/23 council meeting? No, that can't be right.
7/13.
7/13, yeah, that's the last council meeting. They are now online, in case you want to see what Greensight was talking about, both her critique and the actual ordinance. We were able to get it posted. Previously, the ordinance, part of the ordinance, was posted in the municipal code, but not the purposes and the full initiative. This ordinance, which essentially required the police to pay special attention to sexual assault and allowed this commission to demand of the police records and some kind of oversight, as I understand it from what Jillian said, is now online and available. Part of it that was available in the municipal code, but the other significant portion was not. And city council members admit that they had not read the municipal code when these bylaws came up. Two members of the city council, Byers and Madrigal, tried to table it, or at least postpone it, but they were, silenced and overruled, I should say. They weren't really silenced. They were allowed to talk, but they were silenced by the council majority, led by We Love Kathy Agoni, the staff person, Matthews, Coonerty, Lane, Rodkin, and, of course, Robinson. So I'm going to play a little music, move on to another topic. I invite your phone calls, 427-3772. If you want to say hello to that tireless trooper, troublesome Thomas Levitt here, who's about to toddle off. Now's your chance, 427-3772, 427-FRSC.
Flag draped caskets in an airplane, they are not meant for us to see. Made war look somehow ugly, so they banned it from TV. Beheadings turns out draws a crowd and raises the country's ire. 'Cause that's the bad guys doing that, though our president's a liar. Dusted off and polished, that's how we like our news. Spoon feed what you want us to hold as our own views. No war, no more. No war, no more. Monuments are standing from sea to shining sea. Names are etched upon me, all brothers lost to me. No war, no more. No war, no more.
And actually, I do know the name of that song. I believe it's Peace Chant. And again, that's another one from Pirate's Cove by Evie McKnight. So I just made contact with Peace Camp 2010. Hey, out there, peace campers, keep up the good work. I guess night 20 just ended. This is the 25th. That was the 24th. Yeah, 20 nights. Wait a minute, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, might even be 21 nights. I've got to keep working on my arithmetic here. Anyway, we're going to get a call in from them shortly, but until we do, we'll get some actual earlier interviews. This is from July 13th, actually, the evening, starts out in the afternoon of the Tuesday City Council meeting that Thomas and I were just talking about, where Jillian Greenside got quaffed. I would give you more of the city council meeting directly, but I'm having a little trouble because the individual who spoke at the mic with an anti-homeless tirade, whose name you know, it's slipping my mind. He's around town. He's kind of got a Marine haircut. He turned off my tape recorder. He actually threatened to throw it across the room at one point or to eliminate it. And I said, no, don't do that. But I didn't notice this. And however, he did turn it off. So that didn't stop us. That's not going to stop us. We still have some audio through a video, which we make regularly of these council meetings. And by the way, you can buy a DVD for $1, provided you don't mind walking into their office twice, paying in advance, then coming back and picking up the DVD just to make sure you don't, jip them out of $1. Boy, there you go. Anyway, here is some street stuff, actually Peace Camp 2010 stuff from the, actually starts on the street, so let's hear it.
So I'm out here at the sleep out. I should say the Peace Camp 2010. It's about 10:20.
It doesn't start on the street. Sorry about that. It's actually starting in the camp, or I should say on the pavement in front of the county building where the courts are.
And talking to the man behind the sleep is not a crime sign. That, of course, is none other than...
Kerbugger Chris.
And Kerbugger, you mentioned that Azee came here earlier, the famous, much-beloved and good singing musician from downtown. He dropped on by.
He sure did. We've had just a fantastic night down here at Peace Camp 2010. And Azai is actually going to come back a little later on. And
you're in the middle of doing some texting here.
Give me the text.
Be somewhat distorted on this recording, but we have heard his eye before, actually.
That was, of course, Chris playing a musical bit from Azai's earlier concert for the Peace Camp.
I played him rather regularly. Yeah, I kind of wander around, and there he is. It looks like a crew of folks here tonight. I know last night you had about, 30 people, I count.
30. I think Becky came up with a final count of 33 last night. But you should check the website at peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. And everything is there. So much cool stuff. We got Twitter. We sent our first tweet last night. It was actually kind of historical. And so we tweeted to the world for freedom last night from the courthouse steps. Peace Camp 2010, if you just search that, I guess, you'll even come up with it over at twitter.com. And we have an email address. If you care to send email directly to the camp, we'll receive it here in real time, anytime, day or night. The address is scpeacecamp2010@gmail.com. I'll say it again real slow. scpeacecamp2010@gmail.com. And even Robert, I think, has a phone number that you can give. I don't have it right handy here, but I gave him last night. We even have a telephone number, special telephone number, if you'd like to call the command center or whatever passes for it here at Peace Camp 2010. We'll pick it up, hopefully, in real time, or leave a voicemail, and we'll call you right back.
Indeed. And
all that shit's on the site.
And the site, of course, is www.peacecamp2010.blogspot.com. And today is July 13th, 2010. This is the ninth night of the sleep out, if I'm not mistaken. Today is the 10th night of the peace camp.
And I'm going to interrupt this July 13th sleep out tape to put on directly a telephone call from Bob LaMonica. Hi, Bob.
Robert, how you doing?
I'm good. Welcome back to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I know you're a frequent caller to Thomas's show, and you have some thoughts on the rental inspection ordinance that we talked about earlier?
Well, first of all, I would say about Mike Rotkin that he is the most open politician most of us have ever encountered. I would think you would agree with that.
Well, let me put it this way. Accessible, if that's what you mean. Open... In terms of transparent, no. But accessible, yes.
There's nobody in his league. I'm not aware of a politician that is as open and accessible as Mike Rockin.
Well, I would call him accessible again, but not transparent. I think I mean, he hasn't presented us with a copy of this law, which he should have done. I found him. Well, he'll come and he'll do a lot of schmoozing and politicking with different groups. He doesn't. When you try to follow up and pin him down on various things, you either don't get replies or you get vague replies. That's been my experience in the last year.
Well, that's the second point I would make about Mike Rockin, is that he gets things done.
Well, it depends on what kinds of things you're talking about. Yeah.
He is, if you look at the record locally, I mean, he's a very successful politician in municipal office.
Depends on how you measure success.
He puts things up on the table and accomplishes them.
Uh-huh.
And I think this rental ordinance, although people are going to balk at it, is probably a good thing.
Hmm.
And I think it'll occur.
Well,
he's a good organizer, Robert, a good logistical accomplishing fellow.
Well, he certainly organized an end to rent control at De Anza Motor Home Park, which you're probably familiar with. Forgive me, motorhome isn't the right word, but you know what I'm talking about.
One doesn't necessarily have to agree with a politician to
admire him,
sense their value.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like Mike personally. Actually, I ran into him yesterday. He was doing the Battle of the Bands next to the library. And, you know, he had his little motorcycle and his signature grin. And, you know, he's a nice guy. The trouble is the policies he represents are very abusive toward poor and homeless people. And his attacks on people at city council shutting down public comment increasingly over the years are just, to me, unconscionable. So it's really hard because, you know, I like him as a human being, but as a politician, I think he stinks. And I know what you're saying in terms of he's successful in terms of getting certain things done, yeah. But I don't like generally what he's gotten done. There's some exceptions, of course, but, you know.
Well, you have to flow with the times, and the times are not 1960.
Go with the Inquisition when it happens? No,
not
I don't think you
necessarily, Robert.
With it.
I mean, we are in a very changing period. Santa Cruz is not the Santa Cruz it was 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, but we need voices that speak out against us. And, Bob, you've been a very strong voice at different points. Even, you know, though you haven't been successful at different points, you have stood up and issued, you know, essentially you've spoken up against corruption in the district attorney's office when Art Danner was district attorney. You've spoken up, you've helped try to initiate sleeping ban reform.
Well, I agreed that it should have a shot at the ballot if it could be accomplished.
Right. Yeah, not only agreed.
I think I was one of the ones, if not the one, that suggested if you want to do something about the sleeping ban, put a petition together and get it on the ballot.
Well, you were also a part of the first effort to do that, Bob.
I did some.
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
but
you put your money where your mouth was. And you also,
however,
yeah.
I think had I'm going to speak candidly, Robert, had your approach been more polite, if you will. The issue is certainly well known. I think had you put more effort into it, it would have made it to ballot.
It's interesting, Bob. I was listening to a conversation you and I had in 2002. It was an old tape in the council meeting right after the where I was arrested for making the mock Nazi salute.
And I still hold that.
I know you disagreed with that, but you were also very, you and I had a very interesting conversation. I may play it at some point again on the air because it covered a lot of issues. Right now I'm going to have to kind of give you a chance to have the last word and end this because I have people who want to call in from Peace Camp 2010 and also other stuff I want to do. But
you should have let the Nazi salute episode slide by.
Uh-huh.
Robert, you are an irritant. I'm not saying that what Cronin and Fitzmaurice did is necessarily correct. But I can understand the torment that they felt, and I think as a gentleman, it would have done you much better politically had you took it as a lesson and made an epiphany out of it.
Anything else about the rental thing you want to say before we go?
Another time.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Bob.
Sure.
All right. And phone lines are open at 427-3772. And well, that was quick. You're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert here.
Good Sunday morning, Santa Cruz. We are live from Peace Camp. This is Curb Hugger Chris calling in. How you doing? Who is this knucklehead you just had calling in? Who likes rocking so much?
Well, that's an old-timer who's been watching the scene and engaging in political action for a number of decades, Bob LaMonica. He often talks on Thomas Levitt's show. They have long discussions. Thomas, you're still in the studio. You have chats with Bob.
Yes, I do, and they're very interesting, even though we're not always in agreement. And,
well, I'd like to share an image with the listeners and with you all in the studio. Just picture, you know, our wonderful Mayor Mike, who Bob loves so much, hanging his latest ACLU award on the wall, on his office wall, while he stands with one foot upon the back of the homeless and the other foot upon the back of the working poor. And that's how we on the streets see Mayor Mike Rodkin. So I just wanted to sort of balance that opinion. I was struggling desperately to try to figure out a way to call in on another line. I really wanted to to have a different spin, because I think you know, Robert, more than anybody, how I feel about Mayor Mike and Ryan.
And by the way, Chris, the way to do that for those who are listening to you and want to call in and challenge you is 469-3119. 469-3119.
Thank you so much for that, Robert. Just stick the dogs right on me. I appreciate it. Yeah. Anyway, We love you all. The music selection is excellent. Everybody here at Peace Camp's enjoying the show and listening. I think you have a rapt audience here every Sunday, certainly, and Thursday night when we play the show up here. A lot of people really interested here at Peace Camp and in your show and what it covers and these issues. And it's good to be able to have, for Peace Camp to be able to have a ready access to the media. And we thank Free Radio Santa Cruz for providing us with huge blocks of time during this demonstration. All is well here. It's a Sunday afternoon, so we kind of, the occupation kind of stays big and fluffy, if you will. We don't have to really, you know, worry about access to the courts or anything like that. So all is well here at Peace Camp, and you've been great about giving out the information, so I'll leave that part to you, too. Anybody got any questions or anything?
Well, you know, I guess it's a street party happening up near the Sub Rosa Cafe today from 12 to 6. At least that's what was advertised on Indy Bay. I believe it was on Indy Bay. And I'm wondering, is anybody going to go from the Peace Camp and try to round up some of those folks or let people know what's going on or do any outreach there? I also heard rumors of, that's question one, but question two is I've heard rumors of a crackdown on the levee this morning. Two people talking.
Yeah, I can give you a report on the second. And as for the first question, I think just now I'm looking up. I have to get away from the camp, you know, as you know from radio, when I do these interviews, I have to go away. And so now I'm looking up upon the platform, watching people gather around the radio, and it's news to us, and I believe that you will now have a rather large contingent down there at Sub Rosa. It's one of our favorite spots to go to, period. So I think there'll be some representatives from Peace Camp down there, I would anticipate. I see some of them getting ready to leave already. So
again, that starts at noon, not for another hour and a half, so don't go down.
Yeah.
I mean, Sub Rosa may be open. I don't know what their story is.
Yeah, they'll
is
be open.
Sunday
they're
morning.
Open usually around 10 on Sunday. So
I know they've been having problems with the threats about, you know, against Sub Rosa. Some members of the Sub Rosa felt at least a couple month or two ago with the, you know, the window breaking downtown that caused such a stir, and you know, the blaming the Sub Rosa and the media and the DA's bullshit and the latest attacks on West Modes. So I don't know if they're open. That's good, I'll be glad to see you down there. I'll be checking afterward, looking in on the block party and seeing what's happening when I leave the show.
Well, make sure you also coming up and visit us here, Robert, as well.
Well, I might. I know you're a ne'er-do-well bunch. I can't say, you know, you're questionable. You're violating the law, as far as I'm concerned. Even though the county is for some reason giving you a pass at the moment, you know, I don't know. Association with you might work against me in my future political campaigns. You know.
Well, it may. I will give you a River Bottom report. We did receive a rather, it was kind of funny because it was really kind of epic, like something out of a movie. They all sort of showed up at once and trooping across the grass. And yes, there has been a big raid, if you will, or a big to-do down on the River Bottom. It's mostly surrounded around the coastal cleanup, which I've talked endlessly with Steve Fleick about, because he's never realized from our perspective how how that works. But so what they did was they swept down yesterday morning, very, very early in the morning, swept the river bottom of all the camps, and then warned them that anything left behind would be disposed of by the coastal cleanup. And so we received a very long line of refugees, which gave a huge boost to our numbers. We had 47 last night, which is yet again the second night in a row that we've broken an attendance record here at Beast Camp. The night before last was 45, which was a record. And so and we received them with open arms, despite the fact that just amongst us street people, the river bottom folks had not had a whole lot of friendly things to say about Beast Camp and had kind of avoided us. But we received them well and with open arms. And who knows, maybe now that the brouhaha in the river is gone, some of them will choose to remain here with us at Peace Camp, and that'd be wonderful. We'd love to have them.
Well, isn't there been a lot of, you know, I know in the papers there's been the heroin highway and the heroin camps and the meth sales people and, you know, the bicycle thieves, not so much that. That was sort of an earlier time. Are you finding any problems in Peace Camp 20 around the illegal use of hard drugs that is, in you know, prompting concerns?
No, not that's prompting concern, and officially I see no evil anyway as the spokesman of Peace Camp, but I will just say this and put this out as a sort of counterweight to that, and that is that, you know, we here are not in a bubble. Peace Camp 2010 exists on the steps of the courthouse in downtown Santa Cruz, in between the jail and the police station, the sheriff's station. So we are in the very middle of a city that has problems with crime and with harder drug use and with alcoholism as well, which has been a problem, and with mental health issues, you know, with folks that have mental health issues. All of these problems are not going to be any more or any less for us here than they are for us when we sleep on the river bottom and when we sleep out around Santa Cruz. That's part and parcel of this issue, Robert. And that's what we're trying to show and demonstrate, is that these people, some of them are very vulnerable. You've met a lot of the folks that are here. We have disabled people. We have elderly people. We have, you know, people that with child. We have people with health problems. So, you know, they're very, very vulnerable. And we do the best we can to look out for them here. But this is they're no more or less exposed to this element, these criminal elements, than they would be anywhere else. And the idea of the sleeping ban is that it forces people to sleep with those that they normally wouldn't trust or wouldn't want to be around. And instead, if we had the sleeping ban lifted, people of like mind could gather together. And Ed, for instance, Ed the other night was very surprised. He said, "Would you want to be under police scrutiny?" Yeah, Ed Fry, the attorney who brings our crapper every day, he said that, you know, he said, "You would want to be in a well-lit area where the police could get to you? Wouldn't you be concerned about privacy?" He's like, "No. When you sleep outdoors, you know, you don't have an expectation of serious privacy. All they want is to be left alone. But if the vulnerable and the elderly could get, and people could gather together of like mind in well-lit, you know, areas that were visible from the road, you know what I mean, so that police could, you know, keep an eye on it. Yes, many people would jump on that, and that would eliminate that problem. It would allow people who are just good law-abiding citizens, are transients or homeless, for whatever reason, whether it be poverty or by choice, could gather together of like mind and become a self-protecting organization. It's really the cornerstone of anarchy. And I stand for it firmly, and I think it's the way to go. I think the overturn of this ban is essential because this is a humanitarian issue, and people are being preyed upon by the very elements that you described every day out there all across Santa Cruz. It's not happening here because we've created a tiny bubble of respite from it. But is it a problem that a homeless person faces on a daily basis? Absolutely.
Well, what do you do when you find people who are regular heroin users, and there are people like, you know, who self-medicate or meth users who don't just do it for the hell of it, but because either they have an addiction problem or a despair problem or any other number of problems, who want to have a place to sleep? What's your reaction to that? How do you address that issue?
We're about sleeping. And if I see something that's inappropriate to take place on the courthouse steps, then I simply go up to that person and advise them that, look, you're sleeping in the belly of the beast, man. Those windows up there that overlook us and surround us most likely have cameras upon us, and it's on you. It's on you. You know, we're not here to stand for a drug issue. We're not here to stand for drug legalization, although, you know, all of us, I'm sure, have opinions favorable to that. But we're here to stand for sleep. And so if you get in trouble for something that's your personal behavior, that's the kind of behavior that should be at issue here, and I think I've even heard you say it before, that they should, and emphasize it, you know, people should be cited and should be worried about issues that involve true criminality. They shouldn't be worried about sweep. Sweep is a separate issue from all of this. And the criminalization of sweep is a separate issue from all of this. If you engage in criminal behavior, you're taking your own chances. You know what I mean? You've got to live with your own karma. But it has nothing to do with sweep. And so, yes, they're allowed to sweep as long as they can, you know, behave themselves in a manner that's appropriate to, you know, like I said, they're on the courthouse steps, and not only are the police probably watching, but we as activists are actively trying to engage the media and get them to come here and take their photographs as well. So, I mean, there's, you know, even less expectation of privacy on the courthouse steps than there would be anywhere else if you were a homeless person sleeping outdoors.
Now you
and
said,
I think we've been good about emphasizing that to people, and I think they get it.
You said that you have the largest number ever, 47 people. Has that created more difficulty? Has that created more resources or both? What's been the situation?
It's like anything like this. I've been through these a number of times. It's more work. Yeah, sure. But am I overworked? No, not right now. Let you guys know, you know, either through private channels, those that are involved in this, or publicly, I would say I'm overworked. I'm not overworked. I mean, is it a hard job? Sure. You know, to make sure everything happens on time according to the various arrangements that we've made to keep this happening, yeah. And the addition of the people is a little more work for everybody involved, not just for myself, but for everybody that's here involved. It's a little more work. Is it unduly burdensome? No.
Are many house people coming down to sleep out and join you? Is that happening, or is it pretty much emergency sleeping for folks who have no place to go?
Right now, it is primarily, I mean, as you know, at the beginning, there were many house people, and I think we were still, at some point, we were actively recruiting during media interviews and stuff to try to get people to come down, and we still are. Anybody is welcome here, and I'll say it again, we'd love to have anybody come down and sleep with us, but to be honest with you, a lot of people are coming in and out who aren't even identifying themselves anymore. We're getting such numbers now that a lot of people sleep here that I never meet, or that none of us ever meet in the morning. So there may be house people. I can't say for certain that there aren't house people, but for the most part, I would say these are people without buildings to sleep in. Mm-hmm. And, that, you know, again, we talked about it before in radio shows. That's all different kinds of folks. We have, you know, people that are college kids who are just traveling the country and hear about this. And they're just passing through town. And they hear about peace camp. They come. They spend a few nights. Usually they're pretty good about dropping off their extra food in their backpacks when they leave. And they have a great time. They have another little story to tell about their travels.
How about political activists and people of that sort? Are you getting anybody who's... I know Steve Pletch showed up, the city council candidate who spoke up on behalf of the homeless, I guess, on the
first few nights.
I'm very
proud of him for doing that. And you know, he's been, I would say, just cautious about his public contact on the homeless issue. But I tested him out pretty good. And one of the things, he went
now
to the cops.
Who are we talking about now?
Steve Pletch.
Steve Pletch.
Yeah, and he did a little debate thing, I guess, during the as part of the council race. I guess they get to make a presentation to the police department, and one of the things that the police department asked him was, what would you do about the homeless? And he really stood his ground on things that we had talked about, and he said, look, the homeless have told me they don't want any more money. They just want their civil rights back and their civil liberties back. And I'm really proud of him for that. You know, you can never tell what these guys are going to do when they get in, what any of us. I mean, even if we ran, Robert, I wouldn't, you know, politics is such a dirty fucking business that the ooze begins to slip out of your skin the minute you sign the election papers. So far, I endorse Steve Pletch, and I'm willing to go that far. And, of course, I endorse Ed Fry, who we're desperately trying to prod to run as well. And now, those would be the two that I would have some confidence in to bring some progressive
In the past, thank you for that, Chris. We're talking with Kerbugger Chris out of Peace Camp 2010. If you got questions for Kerbugger, I believe we can try to have you call in on the separate number, any of you listeners out there, at 469-3119. 469-3119 is the number to call in case you want to ask Kerbugger a question, or maybe ask me a question, make a comment.
If I can have just a couple of seconds, Robert, I'd just also like to shout out to the city of Santa Cruz. I'd first like to thank everybody who has been so kind in bringing by many, many donations of food and blankets and whatnot. And just to remind everybody, it's an ongoing occupation. We do still need donations. Like to ask for prepared food that's already cooked and ready to eat, so that we can try to keep the impact on the ecology down here. We don't want to cook, so bring some prepared food. We could certainly use some coffee this morning. The the troops that are left here have had a little bit of a stressful morning, so we could use some coffee and some blankets. As always, we have many, many people showing up with no bedrolls or nothing, in fact, because the cops have taken their backpacks and bedrolls and put them in storage for half a week. And so we can always use blankets. And just a shout-out to the community. Thank you so much for the support, and keep it coming, folks, because we're really making a stand down here, and we want to make Santa Cruz proud of us. And I think the ones that have come down really feel that way. So.
Peace Camp 2010 is at the County Building 701 Ocean at Ocean and Water Streets, right in front of the courthouse on the steps where you walk in from the parking lot. And I'm talking with Curb Hugger Chris. Chris, I know that when I was there night before last, I believe it was on Friday evening, we had a Huff meeting on the steps, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group supportive of the camp, as well as camp residents kind of, you know, involving themselves. There was a couple, Kathy and her associate, who drove up in a vehicle, and I suggested, you know, you can park here in the county parking lot overnight. It's not illegal to do that, although there is a county law about habitating a vehicle, which I suppose they could try to pull out, but we'll see if they do or don't do that. Have you had many people in their vehicles sleeping overnight? And if you have, you know, I get some of these vehicles are self-contained. They have their own bathrooms. They have their own cooking facilities. Has there been any volunteers in there? Because there was at a previous sleep out we had at City Hall for people to either offer their facilities for cooking to the camp.
Well, again, my direction with that, for whatever influence I have on Peace Camp here, has been away from that. I've tried to, I want to exercise some caution with the breakdown of the environment here. We're in a very small, confined area, and the piling up of groceries and cooking facilities, little stoves and stuff like that, is just not the direction that I want to take with this. I think if people would just bring down prepared food, food that's already cooked, hot, and ready to eat.
Again, that wasn't my question. Chris, my question was whether anybody in a vehicle has offered to do cooking for you in their vehicle.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is no, and we wouldn't ask, and we're trying to de-emphasize that. What I would like to say about the people in the vehicles is to let themselves, make themselves known to us, and we'll make sure that they're parked right up against the peace camp, and that they're not left on a far-flung area of the parking lot where they can be harassed by the sheriffs.
And there was harassment earlier on in one occasion, but you say that hasn't reoccurred, right?
No, it hasn't, but we'd like to prevent it. So if any vehicular residents out there are listening and they want to come down, please come down. We'd love to have you. We don't need to use your facilities or anything like that, but we'd love to have you. And identify yourself to Peace Camp, and we'll make sure that you're parked snuggled right up against the areas where we traditionally occupy all night long. And we have had a trickle of vehicular residents come in over this last week, mostly from the press coverage. So we actually do have two or three now that sleep here every night.
Anybody last night or the night before?
I beg your pardon?
Anybody last night or the night before?
Sure, yeah, both nights. Yeah, we've had at least one group, if not several, of vehicular residents both nights since the big media coverage during the midweek.
Well, Curb Hugger Chris, I'm glad to hear from you, of course, and I want to get all updates.
Glad to hear from you, Robert. Great show. Thank you very much for, you know, giving so much time of your show and everybody else who's also dedicated huge chunks of their show to over there at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to remind everybody that Free Radio Santa Cruz also needs your help, and we need to find a new place for the transmitter. I don't know if that's been solved yet, but as far as I know, we're still looking. And so this is the only free speech outlet in Santa Cruz of its kind. I mean, it's a one-of-a-kind thing. And so if you work in your heart, and if you've got a nice piece of property, and you've got a tree out back and a shed that you can, you know, house a little bit of equipment and consider helping out Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I appreciate that, Chris.
Robert.
Before you go, Chris, has your telephone number 675-6096 at the camp and actually been ringing? I've never gotten through on that number, so I'm wondering, have you been able to...
Because you insist on giving it out as a local number. It's not a local number, so everybody needs to dial, as all people who are in the digital world understand, the full number, which is 831-675. And we've gotten calls from all over the nation and all over the county. So the phone works fine, but they have to dial the numbers. So
right. Yeah, I know that on any landline in the area, if you dial the local number, you don't have to dial 831. So I'm just surprised.
Right, because it's not a local number, though. The telephone number is not.
It's not local, but Free Radio does not have a long-distance carrier. We don't have that here. We accept only really local calls. But I've tried it from other phones and haven't been successful. So I just wanted to make sure that you have been able to get you know, calls on that line.
Oh, right? Yeah. We get endless
voicemails. So people can give a call at 831-675-6096 to you, and, you know, you'll be there.
I'll be there, and we also, once again, give out the website because all that information is there. If somebody forgets the phone number or didn't write it down just now, the easiest way is peacecamp2010.blogspot.com, and they'll get right there in about 2 seconds.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Yes, sir.
All right, man.
Good to see you, and call us again if you need us.
I will. And you call back if you got stuff you want to talk about. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Still in the studio with me, apparently lost in his own reflections and playing music of his own phone, is troublesome Thomas Levitt. Thomas, any comments of any sort?
Nope.
No comments from troublesome Thomas. All right, then. Let's go back to some of the interviews from the peace camp. And also, hopefully, your phone calls at 427-3772.
There, all right, don't see the peace flag flying, shockingly enough. Is this
me? It hasn't arrived yet. I believe the girls took it with them. They were the ones that actually were the most disturbed by this because they're the ones who kind of towed the line. I was trying to act as a journalist, actually, and I got thrown out of the courthouse because apparently there is a rule that you must be a registered journalist in order to journalize in the courthouse, and you must actually be interviewed by a judge for the privilege of exercising your First Amendment in the county courthouse.
That was That was cooked up you should be. That was cooked up by Judge Volkman, an ad hoc ruling about a month ago, which has nothing to do with how things have normally been conducted here at the courthouse. So will it actually stand? We'll see when they come and get me.
Well, Ed also is welcome and has offered to use me as bait as well, and I don't care which one of us, but one of us is going to go in there, take a picture, and I'm going to pick the same stupid goon that threw me out this morning. He's going to be my target.
And you are, in fact, pointing behind you because you are leaning against the very window behind which resides two corridors down, the metal detector, which I assume that particular bailiff was standing at.
See the metal detector. It's right there.
What was happening here, and maybe described later in the tape, if it hasn't already been described, is the after some deputies seized the little purple peace flag that had been sort of tied to the bottom of the flagpole as a sort of a symbol of the peace camp, and made off with it and ignored the requests of people to return it. Peace camp members, including the owners of the flag, followed the bailiffs into the building, and I guess Kerbugger Chris had his camera with him, his phone camera, possibly his phone recorder, whatever facilities he was using, documented what was going on, and it was threatened by the bailiff saying that he had to have permission to record and photograph in a public area inside in the court building, even though they weren't in a court room and the courts weren't in session. This is, as far as I'm concerned, a very novel interpretation, though it was used on one prior occasion in the last couple months against activist Becky Johnson, who was, ironically, the woman who was pursuing the deputies who were stealing the flag. I guess they wanted to play a game of some kind. Not a very nice game, and a game that would be regarded as theft if they didn't have those guns, uniforms, and badges on. But the issue is an interesting one. It has not yet, as far as I know, been resolved. That is to say, there has not been a re-entrance into the courtroom with a video camera, not the courtroom, the court building, the corridors of the court, where media does not seek specific permission to or credentials to be there. It's a public space. It's actually paid for by the public, and it cannot be excluded and made opaque and turned into a secret area controlled by, I don't want to say the secret police, but the deputies, based upon their whims and preferences or the fears of particular people who are going to court who don't want to be seen in public when they are in public. That's how it is. So we'll see how that goes. I think that's an important issue, which we've got so many important issues that keep coming up as the repression deepens in this depression that we have to, you know, scramble to keep up with them. Let's hear some more from, again, I think we are talking, and let me be sure. Yeah, I think this is July 13th, which, of course, is about almost 2 weeks ago. In the opening days of the Peace Camp 2010. We, however, have a call, so let's see who's giving us a ding-ding. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Good morning, Santa Cruz. Hello, Rob Norris.
Is this
about bailiff stealing peace flags?
You got to get your own show
the
there.
Courtroom, making away with peace, stealing it. What
I'm describing it to be, and I know that you had your own vehicle taken away from you on Wednesday by the CBS tow company guys.
Stealing going on in Santa Cruz here and there by local authorities.
Yeah.
What is going on with them? They're taking peace away from peace camp. It's like taking from John Lennon or Gandhi or Martin Luther King or someone like that.
It's your standard power trip, I think, pretty much, Dave.
Peace officers stealing peace.
Indeed. It's piecemeal, I must say. In any case, any news for us on what's cooking?
A lot of musicians from, that work for money and everything like that need to focus in on what's going on here. It seems the building people aren't focusing on what...
Well, I'm not sure that we have that many musicians there, but I'm turning down your mic so I can actually get a word in edgewise. But have you got any reports that you want to pass on to us that have happened in the last few days? I know you're a regular at the drum circle.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's just going to keep going. We don't like alcohol at the drum circle. It's not very nice to bring alcohol. There are some famous drummers that were drunks, Ringo Starr, Keith Moon, those kind of people. But they're, old, and they don't even play drums anymore. So.
Usually they weren't drunk in public either.
This place here in Santa Cruz at 701 Ocean Street, where there's a peace camp going on nightly, I believe it's 8 to 6:30 or 7.
Actually, it's a 24-hour peace camp, but it does happen every night as well.
Well, they have from 8 till 7:30 in the morning to come and steal peace from people. 8 o'clock p.m. to 7:30, they will be trying to steal your peace at 701 Ocean Street. So everyone get down there and bring a peace sign.
Actually, they've been pretty mellow, Dave, about that. This is one example where they weren't mellow, and I think it's important we be aware of those examples. Have you been to the peace camp and stayed overnight there yourself?
No, I just visited in. I'm planning on visiting in again if they steal peace. They need to be drummed away.
Well put.
Stealing peace. People's peace, peace and quiet. But, they don't mind drums when someone comes to steal peace. They like...
True enough, and I expect you to be there to do a little drumming. I appreciate the call. Anything else?
No, just peace, Santa Cruz. And, all you policemen, lay off those peace camp people and don't steal their peace signs. Take care, Robert, and peace.
Thank you. And that was Drum Circle Dave, who he has been a supporter of the Drum Circle, which is, a public assembly of musicians and drummers who have been driven from pillar to post, finally finding at least temporary sanctuary, a public space where they can play on the triangular area right next to Water Street across from CVS, which used to be Long's, the big drugstore. And that has become not only a area for the Wednesday Drum Circle, but it's also a place where a lot of folks gather at different times and hang out. And there's been some police harassment, although not so much necessarily at that spot, though it continues to happen. It's an interesting thing I like to follow. Maybe the police are happy to have folks off Pacific Avenue. Having driven people away from the Poganip and from the parks and from other places and from being in vehicles, towing their vehicles and not allowing their vehicles to park after 12 o'clock at night on many city streets, even though no one's using those parking spaces, it's not surprising that folks would show up on Pacific Avenue, criminalizing being in a public parking lot, unless you're parking or retrieving a vehicle. Again, cutting back public space, and people wonder why folks show up on Pacific Avenue. So people need to show up more visibly to turn back this tide of privatization and gentrification which Santa Cruz is going to be suffering all the more as the Coonerty mentality continues. Coonerty is vice mayor, likely to become mayor, and a big business guy in town who is masquerading as a lawyer and a civil libertarian. He's not even masquerading. Well, I guess he is. Well, he teaches courses up at UCSC in Cabrillo on civil liberties or constitutional law. So it's one of our kind of standing jokes. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert. And this, of course, is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Let's hear some more from the Peace Camp's archives.
Where the cop, you know, was, and I guess that's what he said, is the Department of Homeland Security, you know, can't go, you know, it's danger, I don't know. He said the same crock of shit to me, man, and you know, I don't know. I was journalizing one of our own here having a confrontation with an officer. So, irregardless of whether that rule existed or not, they already knew I was a journalist. I made it clear, if not, because you can hear me on the tape yelling, I'm a journalist, I'm a journalist, I'm a journalist, to the top of my lungs. You know what I mean? So, and I think a little leeway could have been cut because all I had was a single small recorder and you got it here. People see what I got.
And what we have here again is Kerbucker Chris talking about this shutdown of his right to a document, essentially a deputy theft, which they conveniently said, no, you can't record it. You know, well, you can't photograph it. Yes, you can. Anyway, we have a caller, again, on an earlier topic, but one that I think we wanted to... We pursue a whole bunch of topics at the same time on this show. Hey there, caller. How you doing?
Not bad. Thanks, Robert. I just heard... I was wanting to call in, but I didn't know the second line. Uh-huh. When your caller was talking about the effectiveness of Mike Rodkin as a politician, uh-huh, and how he got things done, and I couldn't help but think of the most infamous politician that was effective at what he did, Hitler. So I just... wanted to throw that out there because being effective.
Yeah, being effective is not necessarily, you know, equivalent with being effective about the right things. And I wouldn't call Rodkin a Hitler by any means, but nonetheless.
No, I'm not calling Rodkin Hitler. It's just the comparison that callers seem so pleased with how effective he was, and that's the scary part. It's like, well, you have to.
Yeah, effectiveness is a virtue, but it certainly isn't the only virtue. And there are other virtues, I think, that are more important, particularly if effectiveness is in the wrong cause, you know.
Yeah, I've tried to email. I actually emailed every city council member about a certain downtown issue, and Rodkin was the only one to respond. And he did respond often, but I was more annoyed that he was the only one that responded. And it's like the other ones are a bunch of mutes and can't comment on anything. It was addressed to all of them because they all need to know about the issue, and I'd like to ask them why.
What was the issue, or is that something you want to talk about?
Regarding violence and alcohol consumption downtown, Laurel and Pacific area. So it's the city council has a way to deal with trouble alcohol licensees, and Rodkin. Even the police are kind of unaware of what avenues they have that have been given to them by the Alcohol Beverage Control Agency to discipline businesses that have a problem with serving alcohol, causing too many fights or violence or attacks, whatever, of any kind, public intoxication, selling to alcoholics, selling to minors, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that was the issue I was trying to get Rodkin to respond to, and he did, like I said, and I was hoping everyone else would chime in, but I got nothing from them.
Mm.
So moving from that subject on to a similar, but another one is the how do we clean house in city council? You know, it seems like we need to get some new blood in there to change things. That seems to be the only effective way to do it.
Well, there are going to be four vacancies in November, this coming November, and, two of them are going to be Rodkin and Matthews because they can't run again, as I mentioned before. So I think, I'm not optimistic about the people that are going to replace them because I'm afraid you have a well-organized and a well-activated right-wing opposition around the issues there's concern about violence, gang problems, and homelessness is not being touted as a sort of the, you know, it. These folks are anti-homeless and NIMBY, but they don't build themselves that way. They build themselves as concerned with, decorum and lawful behavior downtown, where lawful means not sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. You know, if you're homeless, which of course is absurd, but which is the law in Santa Cruz. So, I mean, and I'm thinking of the group Take Back Santa Cruz, which has gotten a lot of publicity recently in the last year. I've asked the supporters of Take Back Santa Cruz to clarify what, you know, if they are, by the way, if you're getting an echo, you should be turning down your radio. That's what probably confusing for you. I've asked them to say, we don't want any more violence. We want citizens to take action against, hard drugs, although I think there's no way to go after hard drugs except by legalizing and dealing with it in a medical way. But, you know, they're still big on the get them out of our neighborhood bullshit.
Right.
Which I understand. If I was, you know, having cocaine dealers or meth dealers in front of my modest little room, I probably wouldn't be too happy either if, you know, if there were problems that arose because of that. Anyway, I'm going on a bit too long, but there is going to be, you know, an opportunity for four council members to go. Perhaps you'll consider running for city council.
Well, have you actively supported people in the past that you liked? Or
oh yeah,
I
supported
anybody.
Yeah, Thomas Levitt, who's our previous talk show host here. He does the wake up call right before my show.
Yeah, I know Thomas.
You know, he ran for city council in 2002, and Steve Argue, another activist, ran in 2000, 2002. Linda LeMaster ran in 1992. There's a whole. Usually, these are candidates that are like Ralph Nader. You know, they don't get or like Cynthia Kennedy, if I have her name right. The woman, you know, the people who run also runs, but the point is to vote for someone you want, not someone you don't want. And I'm not into the lesser of two evils stuff generally with these council members, because with almost only one exception, and that was Celia Scott, who won and served for 4 years and stood pretty steadfastly against all these civil liberties violations and in favor of the most elementary, obvious rights for homeless people. None of these council members have been willing to, you know, stand up against gentrification bigots, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it sounds like we should have a decoy in there, since that's what most of them are, sounds like. Someone who stands on a platform of, anti-civil rights and gets elected and then swings the opposite way.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you for calling in, man.
You betcha.
All right. Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Little bit more of Peace Camp 2010, and then I'm going to move on to another subject. Probably talk a bit about the push in San Francisco to institute Laura's Law, which is the law that allows what I call needles on wheels. If you're designated as crazy, mentally ill, schizophrenic, and you don't take your meds, they'll be at your house with the needles on wheels. That's all for your own good and their own good and everything else. It passed 10 years ago, more almost, in the state called Laura's Law, but hasn't been implemented because there were certain restrictions on it, which activists who seem to have close ties with the pharmaceutical lobby and NAMI, a National Association of Mentally Ill, which are, I think, misguided people who are believing that if you just give them enough dope of a legal kind, that'll just solve all their problems. If only you dope up enough people, and that's been making billions of dollars, or at least tens of millions, in a huge escalating pharmaceutical, I regard it almost as a hoax, that has been happening over the last decade. And Robert Whitaker has written two books, one of them, Mad in America, another, Anatomy of an Epidemic. Had him on the show a couple times. I'm going to try to play a little of one of his recent speeches. He's agreed to come back on the air, but since he's already spoken on these issues, I don't want to take up his time getting him to speak again on the same thing when he's put out the relevant information already and it's available online. So That also means that I'm probably not going to put out, devote too much time to it here, because if you can get to it online, you don't need to have it on my show. Stuff that gets on my show is the stuff you can't get to online, usually. That's the way I do it. People's voices that you're not going to hear. And sometimes you may think you might hear too many of them. I mean, we've had a lot of Kerbugger Chris this morning, but frankly, I think he's got a lot of new things to say. He's got a lot of important things to say and a lot of passionate things to say that I think need to be said and that need to keep being said. So your voices are important, too. Those of you who are listening, but maybe you're thinking of saying something but feel a little nervous about it, don't worry. You know, just do it. It's good practice, because this is what part of citizenship is. You raise your voice, even if, you know, you may change your mind later about what you thought. You may be criticized for what you said. I may interrupt you and say, wait, you know, I don't agree with you. But that doesn't matter. You know, you need to say what needs to be said from your perspective, and particularly around the issues I'm talking about. So hopefully you'll call in, 427-3772. Let's hear a little more of July 13th. And Kerbugger Chris is talking about this, not only this incident where not only the deputies stole the flag, but they also tried to cover their tracks by not allowing documentation of it.
A very tiny, very circumspect little digital camera that actually is so cheap and inexpensive that we'll be lucky if we can see the pictures. So I just really think that there should have been some slack cut. Nobody was being obtrusive. Becky wasn't about to get arrested or anything, but she was having a good time.
As I said before, this is a ruling which is just, and only I've only heard it in one case. It's never been the case. I've always taken pictures. I've always recorded. Never been hassled. And I've heard no such ruling. In fact, the ruling they showed us didn't say that.
Well, maybe they don't know
It talked about you can't take pictures in the courtroom when the court is in session. That's what it talked about. But the bailiffs are applying to everything happening inside the court building in their usual expansive view of their own powers and their own need to control and regulate.
I would agree with that assessment. And it sucks.
Now, anything happening in the all day today? That I know you were busy.
It was a very peaceful day, but they experienced the same effect that I experienced on the streets here, where apparently the last few news cycles we've done pretty good. You know, and that's been a focus of at least my own focus here has been a lot getting some of our ideas out into these news cycles, and people are picking it up. People are starting to understand what's going on, and we've had people pulling up all day, apparently dropping off tons of really cool stuff for the people, man. People would a lot of stories about stuff. We got four radios now because I mentioned it in the interview.
Are they working radio?
I don't know yet, but you know. But
when will you find out?
The thought is there, if not the material. But I think one of them at least might work. The odds are. So, but it's been a very sweet day in that sense, and it's very heartening. I know that when I got back, the crew was very positive.
Now let me ask you about this. What about? I have to interrupt you because you've answered my question. I'm all set with that. But I'm wondering, you weren't here because you and I were down at the, to the city hall trying to talk sense to the nonsense makers over at the city council, but without success, unfortunately. But back here, there was a regular public coming and going from the courthouse. Is anybody here, did they report back on anything of note, of anything of interest that happened during the day?
Wow, you're still even going to have to repeat the question. I tried so hard to concentrate.
What happened here while we were at the city hall? In other words, not just the donations, but in terms of, was there any interaction with the people coming and going other than the donations that we know of?
I don't know of any interactions with the law. No,
okay.
None of that.
Well, I brought some flyers and some petitions so that tomorrow, if people are interested, they can get signatures. They can. Yeah, it's good. They can. I don't. Yeah, they can get signatures if they want for. And I'll show you the flyers I brought along.
Okay.
Yeah. Another reporter here. What's your name, Adam?
Oh, this is Becky.
And Becky, what have you found during the day? Were you here at all?
Well, this was earlier this morning when the peace flag was absconded with by Deputy Zuby. And
is a Deputy Zuby?
Z-U-B-E. I don't know how you pronounce it. Zuby. And he grabbed the peace flag and marched in, and I chased him and said, please, can we have our flag back?
Where did he take it from? Why did he take it?
It was on the flagpole, kind of connected.
Saying that the sacred flagpole was polluted with a peace flag? Word war, madam.
Well, you know, this is peace camp, and so the peace flag is... symbolic of our effort here of peaceable assembly and seeking peaceable solutions to the issue of people who need to peacefully sleep.
So I understand you you then, from what I hear from Kerbugger Chris, you pursued Deputy Zuby into the court area.
Want to hear it?
And
since you grabbed it, I said, please, may I have that back? That's our claim. Now you're saying it's abandoned property? It was not abandoned property. Please give us our flag.
Summarize, Becky, what you said.
Just that it was obviously not unattended property, since as he was going in, I was chasing him and saying, wait, wait, give us back our flag. You know,
you can't hear that.
How could it be unattended property if I was right there attending to it as he took it? And
I understand the outcome. A man in a business suit was able to seize your property even without any identification or proof that it was his property?
I did find out. I have to amend what I told you earlier. That's based on an erroneous report on my own part. He did have to show ID. He didn't have any. He left it in the courtroom, so he showed a credit card.
You're talking about Ed Fry, the attorney who actually is out here often, was here earlier this evening, and is actually got a porta potty parked right in front of the protest.
He is the shit, man.
He's the shit. So, anything else happened today, Becky, other than your conferences with legal workers? And
yeah, well, one of the other deputies kind of barked that, well, what about the used syringes? What about urine everywhere? And I thought, well, urine everywhere. You know, we've got a porta potty here. It seems to be collecting it sort of in a one sort of sanitary place. And one wonders where all the urine went before we got here.
Underwear, the urine went.
So I said, oh, come on. You've got hypodermic needles and urine on this property 365 days a year. And you're going to blame us for that presence? We with a porta potty and we with an event where we discourage people from using hard drugs. It doesn't make sense.
And we're going to interrupt this rather interesting July 13th tape, because on the line with me, calling long distance at her own expense from Tennessee, is a sign-in caller.
My name is Kathy Buckner.
Kathy Buckner.
And, yes.
And Kathy, I know that we spoke last night, and you are with what groups in Tennessee around homeless civil rights?
Okay, I have been on the board for the leadership team member with the National Homeless Power Project, which is a group of homeless and formerly homeless individuals that fight for their civil rights of people that are still on the streets. I'm also was one of the commissioners with the mayor's commission to eliminate homelessness. And so it was we had a 10-year plan, and I also was on that commission.
And what city are you calling from?
Nashville, Tennessee.
And how long have you been doing this?
I've been a homeless advocate. I've been homeless four times in my life for the reasons that people don't think about that are people have become homeless. One, I left when I was young because of abuse, and a lot of young kids do leave for that reason. Once for a domestic violence incident, which I had a home at the time, but I was unable to go back to it because the system was designed to where they just want you to leave, you know, and I couldn't leave, and they didn't make the person leave my house. And so I was just stuck.
Kathy, when was the last time you were homeless?
With the tornado of 1995, we had a major tornado. There was like seven of them in Nashville, and because of that, it took the roof off of my house in three different directions.
And what year was that? What year was that?
1995.
So you've been housed for the last 15 years.
Yes.
But you haven't forgotten.
I'm also fighting the mortgage company right now because they've raised my. I'm in danger of becoming homeless again because of my mortgage company. I did have Countrywide, now BAC, which is, you know, Countrywide just morphed. But they are trying to take my home. They've raised my house note three times since January.
Uh-huh. So what has homelessness increased in Nashville in the last year because of the war and depression?
Yes, it has. And the group that is becoming the homeless the most at an alarming rate is its family.
Huh.
Because of the economics and people losing their jobs and then losing their homes, they just don't have any. There's no affordable housing, and they think affordable housing is identified in Nashville as being housing that costs $150,000 or less. But they're building apartments, I mean, like condos or whatever, that cost exactly $150,000, and they're calling those affordable.
So,
but people can't afford them.
So what's the situation for people who live in their vehicles or people who are homeless? Are they forming tent cities? Are there laws that criminalize people who sleep in their vehicles at night? Here in Santa Cruz, you may have heard a little bit of it, though. You said you couldn't catch our stream. But we have a camp out on the city hall, actually the county government building steps in front of the courts, for the last 20 nights. And they have been left alone, although the mayor has been fulminating against them, and, you know, we're getting usual crap from the people in the newspapers. But
right.
What's the legal situation in Nashville for homeless people?
We had, in 2006, we did a invisible no more stance, kind of like what you are doing right now. We did get arrested, though, however, and they did lock 16 of us up for actually saying we're fed up, there's no housing, you're fine with us as long as we disappear, and so we're going to be invisible no more. And so we went and set up a tent city right in front of the courthouse where the mayor's office is and the council meets.
How long did it last?
Just until 2 o'clock in the morning. That's when they came and locked people up. They gave people an opportunity to leave right then, told us to take it down or go to jail. And so we had 16 people that actually went to jail. They stayed with
how many?
Said they're not leaving.
How many, if you were to estimate, what percentage of homeless people in Nashville have access to emergency shelter tonight? What would you say? What percentage?
We have in Nashville, there is only 1,200 emergency beds citywide. They are full every night. We have an estimated amount of about 5,000 homeless people. That's not counting. That's what they count. That's not counting the people that are hotel homeless or that are homeless, couch homeless. they're staying with, you know, Uncle Bob or Aunt Susie or whatever, and they're just sleeping on their couch or in their floor. It's not counting those people.
Because I know Santa Cruz has zero shelter tonight as well. We have no, you know, that's one of the reasons that this safe sleeping area that was created 20 days ago by Peace Camp 2010, which you can find, by the way, if you Google for it, you'll find
I have seen some news about you. I mean, I do have some Facebook friends that are in Santa Cruz, and so I have been keeping up with.
Well, do get in touch with Peace Camp 2010 and let them know that, you know, what you're doing so we can publicize your situation, you can publicize ours, and we can set up this linking network, which, you know, I always have tried to do it over the last 25 years when I've been doing this, but, you know, and maybe it's happening. I haven't noticed it's happening a lot. What happened to these 16 people? Were you one of them, or?
I was not. I was actually videotaping at the events as they went on, but I actually almost got arrested just from videoing.
You didn't have a permit to video, eh? Were you videoing in the courtroom
video.
Or courthouse, rather, or some bullshit of that
sort? There's no law that we have saying that you cannot do that.
Yeah, nor do we have. The deputies here seem to cook it up as they go.
Right, and a lot of times that is what they do. We did successfully win one of the battles that you just mentioned about was sleeping in your car. They try to make it illegal to sleep in your car.
Uh-huh.
We successfully defeated that ordinance in Nashville because there's a lot of people that are not necessarily homeless that come to Nashville that they actually sleep in their car. And so it would have made it illegal for a lot of people, which is probably the only reason we were able to do.
But most homeless people in Nashville don't have vehicles, right?
A large percentage of them don't.
And where are they? What are they doing? Are they under overpasses? Are they hiding in the bushes? Are they squatting in buildings? Obviously, probably the answer is I'm answering my own question. But are there any tent cities or created encampments that are tolerated by those?
We do have a tent city, and actually, most of the time, if people do camp somewhere, if the police see it, they destroy it, which is a violation of our civil rights and our right to property, personal property. And there has been a successful lawsuit somewhere, and I can't remember actually where.
Fresno, California.
I mean, this week. And so that was really exciting to me because there is a precedent of law now that people can actually get some kind of assistance for police just destroying all their property.
Well, we have a similar situation here in Santa Cruz. We just heard from Kerbugger Chris, our man at Peace Camp 2010, who is telling us that he's getting reports that the police arrived and said, you know, we'll be back in 24 hours and, you know, we'll clean everything up and throw everything away, which is not legal to do. You can confiscate property and hold it as evidence. You can hold property as abandoned for, I think you have to hold it for a couple of months. But this is all not only not done, but the Chief Ranger John Wallace, who's often the big cheese behind a lot of this stuff, he has actually stated he doesn't do it and he doesn't feel he has to do it and that sort of thing. So we're talking with Kathy Buckner, is that correct, Kathy? I got your name right?
Yes, that's right.
And again, the organizations you've been with are or currently with are or can be found online at or what?
It's Nashville Homeless Power Project, which is an organization that is based. It's homeless and formerly homeless individuals who work for the civil rights to their human rights.
Nashville Homeless Power Project.
Yes.
And
I've also was with the Homeless Commission, which is now called the Key Alliance, which is supposed to be providing housing units. They promised in Nashville at the time when they first did their 10-year plan, they had a count of only 1,800 homeless individuals that were found sleeping on streets on the night that HUD requires that they do, you know, the count.
Uh-huh.
And so they counted 1,800, but they didn't go into any neighborhoods. They didn't go into any abandoned buildings. They didn't go into anything, and it's in the dead of winter. So you find people that are sleeping outside. The count is not, it's convoluted because it's not a true count.
We have a similar situation in Santa Cruz, plus the added sting that after people got counted, they then got ticketed or driven away by police.
Right. And that's,
a little
that's
added
the
whipped cream on the, you know, the cherry on top.
Right. Ours was for years, after the count, they would come in like 3 days after and then destroy camp.
Were you involved at all, Kathy, in this... I heard you about the destroying the camps, and they do the same thing here regularly with labor-ready crews. Were you involved at all in this march that went to Detroit this year? Took about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, starting in Louisiana, went all the way up to Detroit. About have you heard about that?
There were two people from the, yes, and it's, I went when it was in Atlanta, like 2 years ago, but there was two people from our office that did go.
And again, we're talking about the Nashville Homeless Power Project.
Yes.
And that, and you're online. You've got some. We Google for you. We can find you.
Yes, and actually, if you Google my name, Kathy Buckner, there's a whole lot of articles from the past because I've redone the website, which does not.
Okay.
Do it justice.
Spell,
it does
spell,
not do it justice.
Spell your last name.
My first name is spelled C A T H I E. And Buckner is B-U-C-K-N-E-R, and if you just Google it, there's a whole bunch of articles that come up.
So
we did an
Kathy,
urban plunge.
It's Kathy, C-A-T-H-I-E, Buckner, B as in boy, U-C-K-N-E-R.
Yes. Correct.
And people can find you there.
Right, and if there's any listeners that are Facebook listeners, if they wanted to request a friend, I'm on Facebook, and I do a whole lot of advocacy. On Facebook.
Okay. Well, then, Kathy, I'm going to give you the last word, but I'm going to roll because I've got another guest in the studio here who has been patiently sitting here for 20 minutes,
how
probably shivering a little.
Yeah. With our city, the flood that we had actually closed it down because it was completely and totally underwater, and it took away everything, and we're fighting right now to try to get some kind of tent city reinstated. Because there was 80-something people living in our tent city. And the city is not, they have a campground that actually is not being used, but they're not listening to us when we're asking can they set up the tent city there. Right now we have, and I wanted to tell you too that for your campground,
Peace Camp 2010.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peace Camp. You need to recruit college students, media, and some congregations because if they will join with you, they will not destroy that camp.
That's good suggestions, Kathy. Media, congregations, and what else?
Media, congregations, and college students.
College students, if we can get some of those clowns to come down from the hill, that would be great. And sometimes
right.
That happens, actually. Well, listen, I appreciate your calling in and chatting with us for the last 20 minutes. And we're going to ask people to check you out on Facebook at Kathy Buckner, B as in boy, U-C-K-N-E-R. Also, Nashville Homeless Power Project. And possibly on that website, we can find something that we can do to email Nashville to tell them to stop fucking around and do what they need to do.
I actually can send you out actually, through change.org, I can actually put the petitions up.
Good, good. Why don't you do that?
Okay, I will do that. And I appreciate y'all, and I'm supporting you, and anything we can do, I will be glad to do. Like I said, I'll be glad to call 5,900 people and say it's not right, because it's not right that people don't have a place to go, but you expect them to just disappear.
You got it, babe. Thank you very much for doing what you do.
Well, thank you all.
All right.
Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Kathy Buckner from Nashville Homeless Power Project. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. In the studio with me is the redoubtable...
Well, most people know me by Spilly Chili.
Spilly Chili.
But I'm actually the producer, Sandra Lee, in my real life.
And you are a producer at Community TV.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to be able to be involved with a great TV station here in Santa Cruz, Community TV of Santa Cruz County. Just a great resource with some incredible people. And we're getting the opportunity to go out and do some things that you could just never do in a million years on regular TV. And granted, our viewing area is small, but now we are streaming live. If you go to communitytv.org. You can go to our homepage there, and on the right side, you can click on our government channel, find out what's going on with our Board of Supervisors, our City Council.
Or what's not going on.
Well, we'll get to that, I'm sure.